Internet-Informed Guidance for the Dedicated Searcher, as read by the author, David Novak. This book is an element of the Spire Project. Chapter 9, Pursuit. The end of the Cathar conflict came quietly. A few minor conflicts persisted for a time, but were brutally suppressed. Albert tried his best not to be involved, but time and time again he was dragged into supporting some siege that always ended with burning heretics and economic ruin. The dream of a civilized, permissive culture in southern France was smashed beyond repair. Albert's own personal quest had been flawed from the start, he reasoned. Albert chose to be a knight to preserve the ideals of justice. In the end, he was part of its destruction. This bothered him. Perhaps he had lost his battle years earlier. Events took control in a way he could not redirect once begun. In earlier days, he felt content to move forward, to support peace, to advance in career and fame. By the time he realized his path had gone astray, Albert could no longer see a future he liked. Yet it was not Albert's mistake. His world simply found the emergence of a liberated, permissive society as too dangerous, too confronting. Southern France had arguably become the most cosmopolitan Renaissance region of Europe, but as it advanced, as it began to shake off the staid ideas of the age, its citizens naively mishandled their conflict with Rome. We once sought information by looking for something relevant and within reach. Answers crafted by famous but distant authors or archived in splendid but faraway venues did not interest us. Such work simply took too long to arrive. Better we gather local resources and leave international opinion to people who live over there. Oh, a steady stream of the finer items journeyed across the Great Divides to lodge in nearby libraries and local newspapers. A book here, a magazine there. For the dedicated connoisseur, a copy of Bambini, air freighted in from Italy. If not, let us wait for a local magazine to convey to us the latest trends in international baby couture. Then Disneyland built their It's a Small World pavilion and began brainwashing all the visitors with a cacophony of repetition. Small wonder that just two decades later, the world is indeed smaller. Change after change smashes holes in the walls separating our world. In a shift more monumental than any I can think of, information now flows everywhere. Even language and computer ability seem set to crumble against the liberating effect of an open information architecture. There may be other reasons for this change besides Disneyland, but change is certainly in motion. Little will separate us from what is out there. What is out there? Mostly, more of what is nearby. Very few of us create something truly unique. Most of us produce something decidedly common. Every region has its experts in tax law, experts in software coding, and experts in liberation theology. Only today do these experts rub shoulders. Why not buy Bambini direct from Italy? I already buy the occasional New York Times at the local news agency and read Le Monde in English through the internet. This abundance of common information, this internationalization of our information world, has a stunning drawback. How do we find information that is not abundant, not found on 1,000 websites, and not already organized for our consumption by a publisher with prominence? How do we find information not published by an organization we already know? We seek it. We pursue it. Strangle this unwieldy beast we call the internet and squeeze until it gives us what we want. Let me pose two questions. How do we photograph a natural car crash, unarranged, on the street, in public, as it happens? Secondly, how do we find the cheapest airplane ticket to Paris? Internet searching is built on the simple premise that when we ask the right question, we get the answer we seek. Ask the wrong question, and we spend a great deal of time hunting for hints on how to proceed. Look back over a difficult search, and success so often pivots on one single inspiration. At one point, we ask the right question, and everything proceeds smoothly from there. This hunting for the right question is not sloppy or unfortunate. It is the essence of our pursuit. To photograph a car crash, we go to where cars crash, set up a camera near a nasty intersection, and wait. Cars can crash anywhere, but we want to wait where they crash most often. Let us stand at the first turn of a Grand Prix and hope for tragedy. To find the cheapest flights to Paris, we must learn how to find cheap flights to Paris. Seek guidance on how to find cheap airplane tickets. The advice I found suggests checking all three primary sources of discount fares: the online travel discounters, travel agents, and the ethnic travel agents. Knowing this, our search proceeds smoothly. It often helps to view our search as more than a search for information. We also search for a question. Our quest pivots on where best to look or how to look, as with the two questions I just posed. We may seek one thing, but find it by first visiting somewhere else on the way. We will take this notion in four directions. Firstly, identify where the awareness of a resource will flow, the footpath others will follow to reach it. These places will also lead us to where we want to go. Secondly, seek the page next door that introduces a project, but does not include the text of the document itself. Thirdly, hunt through the elevated vista for clues that tell us we are approaching where the information we seek congregates. Fourthly, seek search assistance from others who know how to find what we seek. We will end this chapter with the startling conclusion that the many techniques and tactics we have covered in this book unite to deliver a comprehensive and definitive search, thus answering a question I posed at the beginning of this book. Footpaths. Footpaths is a simple concept. If we publish, how will people find us? Discard, for the moment, the naive hope that people will toss a few choice words at a search engine and find us among the millions of potential sites. Let us focus just on the needs of publishers who do not swim in excess prominence. Focus only on the non-random ways our audience finds us. If visitors usually find us by searching for our name, how do they know our name? Do they read of us in a newspaper article, through a prominent report we publish? Do they arrive at our website by way of a significant directory, a reference site, a database entry? How others find our site is our footpath. These footpaths guide visitors our way. They direct visitors to the information we provide. This footpath is valuable to us, too. It is an aspect of our prominence. Like the owners of a small hotel, we place a sign on a nearby intersection. We pay for a billboard on the approach to town. We place leaflets in the town's tourist center. We host an annual jazz festival, and we support the local junior football team. Each pointer tells strangers we exist. All these pointers establish a footpath to usher visitors our way. Now, view this as a searcher instead of a publisher. The publisher we seek is trying to capture our attention. They are trying to reach us. They have placed information in places they think we will visit, in places where others like ourselves have found them in the past. The hotel owner has a financial incentive to build an extensive footpath. This is marketing and promotion, a task most businesses take very seriously. On the internet, most footpaths are surprisingly small. Many internet publishers spend little effort on promotion. We know utopian publishers are poorly positioned to deliver effective promotion. Promotion is not what they come online to do. Publishers using the academic publishing model often embark on only the barest promotion aimed at their peers and constituents. Even businesses tend to focus their internet efforts on search engine promotion. This leaves few footpaths for us to follow. As searchers, however, if we can find this footpath, we have found our destination. Need to stay a night in the small village up ahead? We do not need to find a hotel ourselves. We only need to find their billboard, the town tourist center, or the village kid who plays in the local football team. In every other medium, there is great clarity in how readers find an author. To find a book, we search a bookstore, a library, or a book database. Perhaps we read a book review. For book publishers to reach their audience, they simply build upon these established footpaths. Contact bookstores, sell to libraries, list our books in book databases, and encourage positive book reviews. On the internet, we do not have such clarity. There is a real possibility that readers seeking information and writers seeking an audience will never meet. Such a strange predicament. Authors expect the challenges of competition, but this is worse. Readers may get lost on their way. They may not arrive not because they read something else, but because they could not find anything worth reading. As we search, we do not need to find that obscure scientist perfecting a diesel engine that runs on powdered straw. We do not need to find the obscure sociologist studying the distribution of drug profits among street gang members. We do not need to find the obscure doctor sewing plastic retinas on the unseeing eyes of Himalayan poor. We need only find our way to the article in the local farmer's magazine, to the book review in the Sunday insert, and to the commercial database entry that will lead us to each of these obscure individuals. This may still be difficult, but at least we have more than just obscure individuals in our sights. So, who would report on a scientist working on powdered straw, the sociologist studying drug gangs, and the doctor working with plastic retinas? Where would such specialists build their footpath? Equally, what would these introductions say? What terms, what identifiable features would they have? These are the questions I am urging you to ask. To reveal the footpath of an existing page, ask for a list of links or endorsements. MySpireProject.com, for instance, benefits greatly from my information research FAQ, from the popular article I wrote on country profiles, from directory listings in both Yahoo Directory and the Open Directory Project, and from links found on many library websites. Looking at my traffic statistics, I also see I get many a visitor by way of CEOExpress.com, and I get occasional short floods when a university professor directs students my way. This is my footpath. Once we study a few footpaths, we can better place ourselves in the role of a publisher, empathize with a publisher. Where would they promote the information we seek? If they promote only on their website, then we must find them there. If they promote through discussion lists, then we have that avenue to explore. If the publisher is skilled enough to earn a listing in the Yahoo directory, we can find them there. We can aim to find their billboard, their footpath. We can aim for those places where they promote their existence. Keep in mind that for a great deal of information on the internet, we may not be able to search directly for the information we want. It may be simply unindexed. Even if indexed, it still may be easier to locate through pages on a footpath, pages that often have better prominence and have better reason to catch our attention. It may be easier to find the billboard than the hotel. Vetting. Beyond where the publisher tries to reach us, we may still find other people lending the publisher at hand with promotion. A familiar task of all internet users is leading others to information we consider valuable. This involves vetting. To vet is to select one item of information among alternatives as particularly worthy of our attention. A link or endorsement is a successful vetting. Chains of vetting serve to bring the better, more popular information to our attention. As expressed earlier, the journalist reports only the most captivating stories. The newspaper editor selects only the most significant stories for the front page. We tell our friends only the most interesting stories we read in a newspaper. A story travels only as far as these chains of vetting push it along. If the information we seek is topical, valuable, or significant, we can usually expect that news of that item will travel far. The footpath will extend well beyond the source. If information is of limited value and significance, it will not reach far. It was the initial internet miracle that the footpath of significant resources extended so very far beyond where the publisher personally promoted. We shared and vetted and informed others so very often. The strength of this vetting is not so evident today. However, vetting is not a mirror of prominence. Different groups of people will discuss and vet a resource very differently. To use vetting trails in our search, we must find a group that values the information we seek. We seek where such information would flow. We can describe vetting trails another way, too. If we want information, find someone who knows of the information. Find someone who already encountered it and may help raise it to our attention. Certainly, discussion groups serve a wonderful purpose in resource discovery. Years ago, I asked for guidance from BusLib-L, a discussion list for business librarians. In the 2 days after my initial email, I received advice from 5 people describing 6 places to access a database I sought. Vetting trails may also direct us towards information instead of people. The BusLib discussion list archive may assist us. A local directory may guide us to the resources we are looking for. As our example, let me describe my search for U.S. seminar venues. One of the more difficult tasks in preparing to deliver a seminar in a foreign country is selecting a venue. I seek sites that have some synergy with searching, inspiring sites likely to put the attending researchers at ease. In Australia, I often choose facilities associated with a state library. In the U.S., library meeting space is often unavailable. Hotels obviously want to help, but I consider them neither inspiring nor inexpensive. Finding suitable venues was initially very tedious and unsuccessful. I tried a range of concepts in words like seminar facilities Denver or auditoriums minus hotel San Francisco. Such searches alerted me to the largest facilities, but not to the venues I hoped for. My first success was to realize that while auditorium is a popular word, the phrase preferred by event organizers is meeting rooms. With this phrase, I could usually find a few meeting rooms in a given city to choose from, though I was still missing many of the exotic venues. I was still being forced through my ignorance into choosing less impressive sites. My next success was to realize that many of the interesting meeting rooms I was finding were within museums. Obviously, there are lists and directories of museums, so with this realization came an effective way to find some suitable venues. With this second success, I looked for other groups maintaining lists of meeting rooms. Yes, in several states, the government agencies involved in disability legislation created master lists of auditoriums and took note of wheelchair access. I could use these master lists to find obscure venues. Twice rewarded, I sought the final piece to this puzzle within the footpaths of several excellent venues I had already found. Unfortunately, this mostly led to individual meeting rooms. It led to few lists of venues. What directories did exist almost always came from businesses catering to the needs of professional event organizers. These businesses indexed large auditoriums and sporting arenas. Requests for small meeting rooms led invariably to hotel meeting rooms, to rooms with prominence and a promotional budget. This was the difficulty, of course. I sought the unpromoted meeting room in the historical house run by a society with little experience and no budget for internet promotion. I sought the small museum lecture theater amidst aging American Indian artifacts. Many of these meeting rooms have little or no internet presence. The final piece to this puzzle was that a local visitor and convention bureau would often maintain a master list of meeting rooms in their city. These lists were not often prominently displayed on their websites and were not well indexed by search engines, hence my difficulty finding them. Lists often only had the first or first two pages indexed. Many of these directories were published as databases and sat beyond the reach of many search engines. I am never lost for an inspiring venue now. I know where to look, and I know how to look. A complex, challenging search resolved itself into a very simple search for the city's primary tourist website, usually the local visitor and convention bureau website. When I cannot find a directory, I phone to ask where it is. This complex and ultimately comprehensive search demonstrates several techniques we have discussed, including the use of a thesaurus revealed the key phrase used by event organizers. Author-publisher identity led me to lists of museums, many with meeting rooms. Anticipating information helped me select the most likely sites for information about meeting rooms, and reviewing footpaths to known sites revealed that the Visitor and Convention Bureau often has a meeting room directory. I no longer find auditoriums by tossing words at a search engine. Notice also how this search demonstrates a common quality to quests with depth and complexity. They unfold gradually. They develop as I notice the players, reveal key terms I need, and refine what exactly I want. My search constantly flips between searching for possible venues and searching for how venues are organized. The page next door. A discussion of footpath and vetting must also focus on one special case, finding information from a page located elsewhere within a website. Traditionally, the page at the top of a directory introduces the resources within. This page includes anything from a short synopsis to a single phrase where it links to the page we want. This page may also provide information on a similar, related, or complementary topic. This neighboring page, this page next door, can be a target for us just as we might aim for other pages on the footpath. Find it, and we have found the document we want. Neighboring pages will not have the same keywords as the document we seek, but they will have the same author and publisher. A neighboring page will also have more prominence. Perhaps we can search for the neighboring page with more precision, too. Under some circumstances, a neighboring page is easier to find. A government department devoted to economic development publishes a report on the development of a rural region that interests us. This same agency also publishes and actively promotes a page that lists all of the rural regions in the state and links to the reports on each region's developments. We can search for the report that interests us, which may or may not be indexed by a search engine, or we can search for the more prominent page that lists the reports for each region. Thus, we can search for the economic development of another region and use it to find the document we want. Alternatively, search for pages that mention two regions. Triangulate a likely resource. Very early on in my career, I searched for the rate of depression in the adult population of Singapore. Notice this is a challenging search. The answer will not be prominent. It may be hidden, it may be unindexed, it may not be on the internet. Indeed, an initial, precise search suggested it was not to be found. How to proceed? A search for depression Singapore reveals a great many students lamenting how depressed they feel living in Singapore. A search for depression medical Singapore reveals a confusing mess of different web pages discussing depression. Did you notice we are discussing Singapore? We have a geographical dimension to this search. I reached for a regional search engine via searchenginecolossus.com, and the search becomes a fraction clearer. Instead of results that refer to Singapore, results come from Singapore. After a little more aimless searching, each search a mass of diverse leads with little value, I decide simply to chart each of the organizations in Singapore that has anything to do with depression. Singapore is not so large, I reason, so the page I seek should stand out clearly from the mess of leads I'm looking at. The first page is a website that describes what depression is. I hack this web address, I reach for the index page of the directory above, and see this is a small psychology clinic. I reason that they are unlikely to have the information I seek, and I would not value a figure they tell me anyway, so I move on. The next link reveals a page on depression. I hack this address and realize it comes from a university student health page. We look for car crashes where they happen most. A student health page is not the most likely place to find statistics about Singaporean health. As the search proceeds past the first dozen likely sites, I begin to think the information I seek may not be online. I imagine reasons why the government of Singapore would not want to reveal how many of their citizens feel depressed. I begin to consider giving up on my search. The 14th reference leads to a page linking to several documents on depression. Hack. The directory discusses mental health. Hack. Health in Singapore. Hack. This website belongs to the Singaporean Medical Association, and there, halfway down the front page, rests a search box for their online medical journal. A search there for Singapore depression reveals a short snippet summarizing a triennial survey of mental health in Singapore that mentions 13% of Singaporeans are classed as depressed. Success. I also have the name of the survey should I need further details. Once again, this search was not simple. I did not find my answer by tossing words at a search engine. We could almost say I was lucky, except that I did use several search techniques to my advantage. I reached for a regional search engine. I anticipated the organization I required. I hacked the web address to reveal the publisher and purpose. I recognized the page next door. I found the answer not as a document that measures depression in Singapore, but as a reference to such a document. I approached this reference through other pages that merely discussed depression and mental health. I approached through pages I recognized as potential neighbors. I was looking for evidence I was nearby. This is exactly what I found. Perhaps I would have succeeded earlier if I had sought mental health survey, the words found in the title of the Singaporean Mental Health Survey. Unfortunately, this kind of guessing game usually fails us. There are so many possible titles for such a document. Our searching cannot depend on accidentally stumbling upon the right search words. Instead, I sought a regional organization involved in understanding depression. I recognized the Singaporean Medical Journal as a likely resource, as a publisher I both respected and felt should have the answer. Such subtleties as footpath, vetting chains, and the page next door are easy to overlook while we search. Yet after we search, when we look back after a successful complex search, we usually find we succeeded not because we selected the right keywords or accidentally looked on the website of the right publisher. We succeeded because we found a page that leads us by the hand to the information we wanted. This happens rather often once we shift from surfing or searching with precision to higher order search techniques like feedback, structure, and identity. For many documents on the internet, we may not be able to approach a page directly. Perhaps the page we seek is not indexed, as in the last example. Perhaps it is not distinct in some way that we can find with a finely crafted, precise search. Finding a footpath or the page next door may be our best option. Searching in this manner requires we take a step back and search without precision. We search with a regional resource, with triangulation, with the help of a directory. We search with something to narrow our field of interest other than precise keywords. We then marry this to a finely tuned expectation of what kind of publisher and resource we want to find. This can be tricky to pull off, but remember, for the unindexed page, it may be our only option. If we think about the types of authors, organizations, and motivations likely to present the information we seek, finding the hidden page may not be so hard. We already have a clear idea of who we want to listen to and what the information will look like. The Elevated Vista. Every search establishes a dialogue with the internet discussing the information landscape. Clues drop on us all the time, though we usually fail to notice. How much information exists on this topic? Are the searches clean or muddy? Are the perspectives balanced or polarized? Does prominence favor one side or another? Only by listening to the qualities of groups of information can we decide. This is the elevated vista, a view of the expanse of information before us. Just as individual web addresses tell us something of the content involved, so collections of information offer clues as to how balanced, complete, and clearly they cover a topic. The clean or muddy search is a particularly helpful distinction. Say we ask our question of a search engine, then peruse their recommendations. If the recommendations include many results by authors and publishers that should know the answer we seek, if the sites seem to be on topic, then we have a clean search. Clean is good. It means we will probably find our answer shortly and trust the answer we find. Muddy is bad. We search, but the recommendations are off topic. They offer advice from organizations unlikely to know the answer, or organizations we would not trust if they did. A muddy search is an invitation to search again with more precision. We may find the one or two possible organizations within a muddy list and proceed from there. One of the better matches may show us the keywords we need to generate a cleaner search, but that is perhaps the best we can hope for. A muddy search may simply reflect a muddy topic, a topic muddied by the use of generic terms with more popular meanings. Irrespective, a muddy search tells us it is time to think of our search, to look for alternative ways to search. Set aside our search for an answer, time to search for our question instead. We usually waste our time when we scan muddy lists for possibilities. Already we have given up on finding excellent information and now hope to bump into something passable. On the other hand, as we approach where excellent information congregates, we should begin to notice more people and organizations with relevant experience and knowledge. We should begin to notice fewer spectators, commentators, and bystanders. The crowd thins, so to speak. We see this in the environment. I'm not discussing a single organization having the experience we need. We may see that too. I'm referring to how the precision of our search becomes more evident as we come closer to our destination. Information on a particular topic tends to group together in similar structures, formats, and authors. It tends to group around a few nexus points, around discussion groups, around a certain publisher motivation, around something. This is actually a more general phenomenon, evident even back in the days before the web arrived. Information clumps. It groups together firstly because internet users link similar information together, secondly because information built in isolation tends to be forgotten, while information produced near similar information tends to be discussed, mutually supported, and reinforced with further publishing, recognition, and promotion. New content tends to emerge in successful formats and enters discussion near existing successful resources. In the old days, information would clump around one, perhaps two, internet tools. Copyright law clumped around a mailing list and an FAQ. Today, information may still clump around just a few formats, a few contexts, a few source types, but this clumping is often less evident. Shakespeare seems to clump as databases of Shakespearean quotations, just as virus information clumps around several Ask an Expert discussion forums. Yes, a random stranger may offer advice on how to remove some pesky virus from our system, but we will also find several strangers with advice reaching out to us from the same kind of terrain, from the same type of environment. Seeing similar environments in our search is a welcome sign. In a way, it is like finding five antique stores in a street. Grouping in this way, such herd behavior suggests competition, cooperation, turnover, and a track record of success less common to antique stores that stand alone. Competition and cooperation brings information together. It reinforces what works and isolates what does not. Many of the better sources, many of the most informed sources, will share format, publisher motivation, context, source, something. They will share similar traits. Think of this as another internet influence akin to prominence, just more subtle. Success breeds competition and cooperation. Competition and cooperation breeds a subtle grouping of information. This subtle grouping has another far more significant implication. It guides us to a definitive, comprehensive search. First, however, a note on assistance. Seeking search assistance. Can we jump away from the search entirely and merely seek guidance? Yes, we have several options to consider, some so very efficient simply because they require so little effort from us. Firstly, ask our peers or our peer network. Send a short message to colleagues or a network of peers like an association mailing list. Ask for help seeking information they probably know where to find. Secondly, ask an expert or an expert network. Send a short message to a person we identify as an expert in a topic that interests us. Look for perhaps an author of a book, a respected article, or a prominent website. Email them directly with our question. Expert networks often work better simply because you ask several people at once. However, if we decide to email an expert network like a relevant mailing list, do remember three points. Firstly, demonstrate we have searched prior to approaching the mailing list. Show what we have found. Secondly, be specific. Choose a clear title and explain exactly what you seek. I usually add a Q: to my title to make it clear I'm asking a question. Thirdly, unless inappropriate, summarize the advice and post it back to the group with a thank you note. Thirdly, approach a librarian for assistance. In recent years, teams of librarians sequestered in public libraries have established a presence on the internet to assist us to find our way. Here in Australia, the Ask Now service, asknow.gov.au, connects us to a reference librarian via web chat to discuss our troubled search. This is great for three reasons. Firstly, these librarians are skilled in searching the internet. Secondly, they have immediate access to resources we often lack, like a business thesaurus and a selection of government directories. Thirdly, just having another skilled searcher think about a troubled search often reveals a solution. I often use this service to great effect. Keep in mind, reference librarians also inhabit public libraries. They have internet access on their computers and usually count internet assistance as just another form of reference assistance. Visit a public library with your work in hand and ask for help. Fourthly, approach a librarian discussion group. This last option must be approached with caution, since we can easily consume a great deal of public time and effort. Mailing lists for librarians like GovDocs and BisLib offer us a rare opportunity to ask precise questions of many librarians at once. Do not use this lightly, but for very specific questions, this can give spectacular results. Comprehensive and definitive. We now reach that one topic that unifies all we have been discussing. How do we pursue all the information on a given topic? Once embarked on a comprehensive or definitive search, we encounter some very peculiar, very challenging circumstances. By definition, the comprehensive search requires we find information that is not well promoted. We must find information perhaps not directly indexed, and certainly information not prominent enough to swim easily into our nets. There are deep fish, quiet fish, and shy fish in our oceans, too. Up in the night sky, some stars twinkle only dimly. It is standard these days to believe everything exists on the internet. We must merely find it. I hope our discussion on publisher motivation has revealed how information may not be available on the internet simply because no one has found a way to bring it there. Much commercial information cannot survive commercially on the internet. So much volunteered information goes unnoticed and unrewarded that volunteers must question if their efforts are worthwhile. Our related discussion on the size of the internet and the vast number of matches global search engines generate should equally convince us we may easily miss information present on the internet. Yes, the internet is full of indexed but unreachable information. With so much absent or hidden, we need a way to decide when we have found the best, the most, or all of what we seek. Obviously, we cannot draw this conclusion from any prominence-based search. Such a search reveals only that portion of the answer blessed with attention. We only listen to the loudest voices. Similarly, we cannot claim a definitive or comprehensive search based on precision. The precise search only reveals that portion of the internet answering to a particular term. We assume some sort of tacit agreement on what terms apply that rarely exists. We also search only source documents, not the footpath or the page next door. Besides, many topics are not organized in this way. A true comprehensive or definitive search only emerges by grasping the structures, orders, and manners of organization important to a given topic. Comprehensive and definitive answers only emerge once we know how the information we seek is organized. Let me backtrack briefly and discuss with you several situations where a prominence-based search will not work and a precision-based search may lead to difficulties. These are situations where we need to reach most deeply into our varied arsenal of weapons. Firstly, the comprehensive. All means those with prominence as well as those without. We can find prominent listings easily enough. How do we find those that lack a loud voice? Precision may help, but what if we cannot find a way to limit our search effectively? Secondly, the controversial. Contentious issues are handled equally badly when we only listen to the loudest voices. Those who do not have prominence are unable to reach our attention and are drowned out by louder voices, by those with more prominence. With wind farms, there appears to be agreement among government, wind industry, and environmental groups that wind farms are great. However, two different minority positions will not be heard if we only stay among the very vocal. A blunt search will easily reveal the consensus opinions, but may miss other sides to a controversy. A precise search may help, but how will we listen to a side of a controversy we do not know exists? Thirdly, the critical. When we have a critical situation, when serious money is at stake, a blunt search is just too amateur. We cannot afford to have a sloppy search, and a blunt search based on prominence is just too likely to accidentally miss something important. A precise search will likely miss the unindexed, mislabeled, or foreign. We need more certainty than a prominence-based or precision-based search provides. On three further occasions, we may or may not be very poorly assisted by prominence and precision. We must usually embark some distance along such a search before we learn we require a different approach. Fourthly, the detailed, very specific information for which we want only a certain kind of answer, can can be badly handled when we listen to the loudest, most prominent responses. Does orange juice cause cancer? We want a medical answer for this question, but a blunt search takes me to newspaper articles instead. Fifth, the difficult. Difficult searches may be just, well, too difficult. When a blunt search does not work, doing another blunt search usually will not improve matters. When a precise search fails, perhaps the page we seek is not called a list of auditoriums in Sydney. Perhaps it was published only last week. Finally, and sixth, the definitive. There are 113,000 web pages by various David Novaks scattered all over the world. It may be too much to ask that a blunt search or even a precise search will lead us to the right one. Comprehensive, controversial, and critical. Detailed, difficult, and definitive. As I stated in Chapter 1, as we improve our search skills, we see less and less reason to use a blunt search. Yes, a blunt search will always answer certain questions with surprising ease and will make a mess of other questions with equal ease. Furthermore, as we become more of a connoisseur of information, it becomes more and more difficult to craft the precise search that leads to exactly what we seek. Let me summarize. Prominence and precision is not enough for a comprehensive, controversial, or critical search because information can be organized in a range of other ways, as we have covered. The same may hold true for detailed, difficult, and definitive searches. Only by first identifying how the information is organized, then chasing it down through that structure, order, and manner of organization, will we find our way. Find how information is organized, and we find everything. We can claim comprehensive if we do this because anyone who has made an effort to stitch their work into the realm of information will first stitch their work into one of the structures, orders, and manners of organization we aim to identify. Furthermore, if a resource is good, other internet users may drag it into place even if the publisher does not. The particular structure, order, and/or manner of organization important for a given topic can be any we have covered. On rare occasion, all our answers will indeed share a keyword or phrase. Rarer still, they may share prominence, as in a list of likely presidential hopefuls. More often, several hidden threads of order and organization exist, and we must reveal each one through attentive searching. Yes, there are difficulties with this stance. The quiet, unpromoted page of an unknown expert may not be stitched into one of the structures or elements of order we reveal as important for a given topic. We may well miss the eccentric neighbor who rents his mansion as a meeting room, but is not told the town council or the visitor and convention bureau, is not a museum, and is not listed in the state agency attending to disabilities. The three structures I identified as important for finding meeting rooms. However, our claim of comprehensive is certainly far truer than restricting our attention to those who use certain terms or those who succeed at internet promotion. The other part of the answer rests with continually executing muddy searches. Where we find a detailed look at internet search techniques, we usually find several. Not only is it unusual to find a completely original idea, but people talk about original resources, particularly those hard to find. Other people will have sought the same information we seek. They too looked, perhaps longer, perhaps then stitching a resource into its rightful place in one of the existing structures important to a topic. As we search, as we seek the structure, order, and organization of our topic, we consult the elevated vista. How muddy our search and how publishers justify their involvement will guide us in this. The elevated vista also allows us to double-check our claim. When all the significant sources we uncover are encompassed by the structures, orders, and manners of organization we conclude are significant, then indeed we have a comprehensive and definitive search. In theory, we may always miss a fine item of critical information that sits alone on the internet. In practice, we see abundant clues that we are coming close to the end. As a final step, we may wish to invite others to tell us of new resources. Just publish our list somewhere prominent and invite comment. Before I proceed further, there are some subtle differences worth mentioning when we tack a controversial search. We especially need the elevated vista for controversial questions. Quiet and poorly published perspectives may not emerge easily. Only by shifting our view to the collection of information, not as a mass of facts but as a mass of perspectives, will we see where we want to go. Try to perceive dark areas, underrepresented perspectives, and bias. As our example, let us contrast two searches. The first, a search for the best search engine. Should we be using Google, Yahoo, All the Web, the latest tool by Microsoft? We can search for some advice, but we really want advice from talented researchers, not just the average internet user. And we could focus on librarians for this. Thinking further, we will want to read the advice of published experts, some discussion pieces, and perhaps some advice columns associated with library associations, as well as library research guides. not the guides aimed at patrons, but those aimed at peer librarians. Okay, I have a clear idea of what we want, and an even clearer idea of what it will look like. I think we will recognize the answer easily. Contrast search engine selection with a search on the usefulness of nutritional supplements. Even a cursory search will tell us, here is a topic deeply biased by the selling of nutritional supplements. Money is involved, and it affects the presentation of information. Add many a researcher explaining complex biochemical pathways with scientific certainty, and perhaps we can understand why we at first read an abundance of articles that generally avoids telling anyone that they don't need anything. The elevated vista is unbalanced. As I search, I see a strong bias pulling me towards buying nutritional supplements. Okay, we have established a bias. How will we counter it? Can we find a perspective unaffected by the urge to sell? A researcher? Most research would superficially support the need for nutritional supplements. Maybe we could locate a large study comparing the health of people given supplements against those withheld. Okay, time to change my approach. I think I will try to find someone I respect who tells me I do not need nutritional supplements. I will start with a search for against nutritional supplements. I have looked at the elevated vista and found a likely perspective that I must investigate. That I cannot anticipate this perspective only means that I must be careful in uncovering it. Eventually, of course, I must decide if I take nutritional supplements or not. By then, I hope to have found significant arguments for and against taking them. I also hope I have not missed a third or even fourth perspective not immediately obvious to me. Perhaps eating liver once a month would provide most of the vitamins I need. Perhaps a couple visits to a nutritionist would lead me to eat better food and see to my nutritional needs that way. I do not know if either is true, but if so, then we have found alternative perspectives not otherwise easy to reveal. Remember the farmers who like wind farms, just not next door. These alternative perspectives may land in our lap while we search, or we may seek them out from hints and suspicions, but they can be hard to find. Varying the format, context, and source will often help reveal these alternative views. I think I really should read some advice from a nutritionist. Is there one that does not like supplements? I would like to find some sort of health department report or United Nations study if possible. In the back of my mind, I may also decide the whole industry of selling nutritional supplements is so commercially powerful and the alternative perspective so unfunded that any conclusion I reach is certain to be biased. I may need to retreat and say I will always be ill-informed on this topic. Just remember, a controversial search is a hunt for the alternative perspectives, since we want to listen to more than the loudest voices. I will soon refresh an article I once wrote on country profiles. To make it comprehensive and definitive, I will reveal the significant structure, order, and organization for the information I seek, confirm all the significant resources I find are stitched into these structures, orders, and elements of organization, and establish a way for new significant resources to reveal themselves to me. With this in mind, I will scan various prominent directories and lists for new country profiles, triangulate further lists by searching for two of the most popular country profiles, identify the various organizations involved in publishing country profiles, reach out to comparable organizations through directories and government hierarchies to seek further country profiles, post a copy of my list on the GovDoc and BisLib librarians mailing list seeking comment, and publish my list with an invitation for visitors to suggest further profiles. As I search, I will pay particular attention to the elevated vista, looking for pockets of information I expect to find but miss. I will seek until I am satisfied I left no gaps unexplored. When I search for travel advisories, I will approach the websites of government departments in countries likely to have travel advisories. For country profiles by organizations like CARE and the Red Cross, I will seek a definitive directory of such organizations, then look through each organization listed for evidence they maintain a country profile. In this way, I allow notions of who would publish to guide my search. When I am done, I will look again at the massive detail I have collected and determine if I uncovered any country profile from unexpected sources, perhaps from organizations not part of a structure I identified as significant. If all these stitch into places I have looked, then I will sigh in relief and claim a comprehensive search. Comprehensive and definitive is possible, but it requires the best of search skills. As an aside, I'm amused that over our long journey of discovery into how internet information is organized, after over 280 pages of discussion, description, and observation, here I sit writing that many of us almost had it right. A simple searcher searching among prominent sites and searching for web pages with certain keywords will tentatively state they have searched the internet and found what it has to offer. They know comprehensive is too much to ask, and they hope too much information did not slip through their fingers. If only the simple searcher knew a few more ways information can be organized, besides by keyword and by prominence. Let us break for a moment and look at comprehensive in a very blunt, less theoretical way. Before we conclude we have a comprehensive search, we must, 1. Search a really big database in a very precise way. Google indexes or is aware of more than 20 billion web pages, a number sure to grow in time. This is a lot of information. If we ask our question in a very specific way, we may find our answer just by chance. With search engine punctuation, refine our search until we have just a few matches, then hope. This approach works best with clean, not muddy searches. 2. Reveal how information we seek is organized. What terms, techniques, tactics, and structures best lead to the information we seek? We can do this by following the footpaths of the first few suitable resources we find, by specifically searching on how to find this information, how do we find cheap airplane tickets, or by working it out ourselves. 3. Build a list of resources that interest us. Use the revealed structure, order, and organization to find other resources of interest to us. 4. Consider if what we have found is unbalanced in some way. Does the elevated vista suggest we are not looking at all the resources of interest? Perhaps a discipline or industry is not represented among the sources we find. Perhaps we have not heard from a type of publisher we thought would have more to say. Perhaps the missing voices use a different term or do not have the prominence to reach us. 5. Ask a real person for further advice. Beyond the landscape of information, the internet is also a community of real people in discussion. At this level, we may even move beyond internet resources to reach information not yet published, but found in the minds of those participating in this wondrous creation. At the end of Chapter 1, I posed a simple question. How can we find information not indexed by a global search engine? I suggested that until we answer this question, we have not truly touched the heart of searching. The answer is in pursuit. On the next page is a graphical representation of the answer. We capture some key. Geography, format, structure, organization, a specific phrase, an author or publisher identity, the page next door, something. We then turn this key and unlock our question. Unindexed or buried internet material will surface when we use a tool, structure, or technique that takes us there. These keys empower us to unlock a topic and craft a truly comprehensive search.